Good morning. May it please the Court. Arthur Dent for the appellant. I'd like to introduce to the Court Jack Fornichari. Jack is with the law firm of Baker Hostetler in Washington, D.C., and with your honors, with the Court's permission, Mr. Fornichari will be presenting the argument on behalf of appellant this morning.
Welcome to the Court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Also at counsel table is Mr. Fornichari's associate, Jeremy Kine.
Welcome.
Thank you.
If it pleases the Court, this case involves a clear breach of fiduciary duty by the directors of a Delaware corporation, which is the wholly owned subsidiary of a Spanish company. The breach of fiduciary duty involved the sale by the controlling shareholder of the Spanish company of a U.S. company called Giant to the Delaware subsidiary. All of this really occurred over 3 days. On December 28, 2010, Uniland S.A., the parent, a Spanish company, formed Uniland Delaware. On December 29, there was a vote at the Spanish corporation authorizing the sale and the establishment of the Delaware corporation. And on December 30, the contract, the stock purchase agreement, was signed by the Delaware Corporation for the purchase of Giant stock for approximately $270 million. I think it's important to realize,
Mr. Fornichari, is it fair to say that the only issue that we're addressing today is whether the standing, that is, the ability to maintain a derivative action, is governed by Spanish law or Delaware law?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, although the defendants have raised another issue, but I think it's not. It's
as far as your side is concerned, that's the issue.
That's the issue.
Okay, let me just ask you a factual question. This is a multi-tier corporate arrangement, and as I understand it, and tell me if I don't have it right, at the top of the tier is a Spanish corporation. And the Spanish corporation wholly owns, we'll call it company number two, which is a Dutch corporation. And company number two owns or is set up a Delaware shell corporation to acquire Giant, which is a Spanish corporation, at least at the time. Is that correct?
The structure...
Is that correct?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
What's not correct about that, Your Honor, is Giant was not a Spanish corporation.
Okay. Where was it incorporated?
Giant was incorporated in Delaware, and I think its headquarters was in Somerville, South Carolina, and it's a company that was engaged in the production of cement.
So Giant, which was the acquired company, was originally a Delaware corporation?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And it was merged into a Delaware shell that was owned by the Dutch company, is that correct?
I think it's still running separately. It was an acquisition of stock, and I think Giant remains operating.
Okay, so basically the Giant is a third-tier subsidiary.
That's right.
Top of the chain is Spanish company. Company number two is Dutch. Company number three is Delaware. That's Giant. Is that right?
Company number three is Delaware Acquisitions, which we've been calling Delaware Uniland, which
okay,
still
exists.
Okay,
and then the Giant itself is a fourth-tier subsidiary?
That's correct.
Ah.
It's underneath
okay.
that. And, of course, up above the Spanish company is a 74% shareholder called CPV.
Right, and your client is a minority shareholder of the company at the top.
Of the Spanish company, that's
right.
correct.
And does not hold stock in any Delaware entity.
That's correct, Your Honor. And so, based on that recitation of facts, we think if Delaware law applied to standing here, there would be no question that my client, the plaintiff below, would have double derivative standing in order to bring this
or in this case, triple or quadruple.
Well, yes, it would be a multiple tier. Be triple, probably.
But that is the question. Does Delaware law apply?
That's right, Your Honor. So and we think Delaware law applies for a lot of reasons. We think the court was in error when it decided on the basis of the internal affairs doctrine that Spanish law applied. Let me start by saying one of the principal reasons we think Delaware law applies is because we think the fiduciary obligation and duty of loyalty and the enforcement of that duty is a matter of the internal affairs of the Delaware Corporation. I mean, the court has recognized, basically, and I think in the Lambert case most recently, that the entire reason to have double derivative actions is to make sure that these
fiduciary... Before you get to that point, you agree that if Spanish law does apply, that your client has not satisfied the procedural requirements under Spanish law for a derivative action?
I do, Your Honor. We've made no demand in Spain.
Okay.
So, if your position is correct, Delaware law should apply, and you don't have to make a demand on the Spanish corporation, and you don't have to make a demand on the Dutch corporation, and then you don't have to make a demand on the Delaware corporation.
I think that's right, Your Honor. As long as we can plead with particularity that there are disabling conflicts and that the directors of those corporations, except for the Dutch corporation, I'll get to that, if we can show that the parent company, the Spanish corporation, the board of directors was controlled and dominated, as the Chancery Court said, by the controlling shareholder, I don't think we have to make a demand. I think it's futile.
But you have to have similar success with the Dutch corporation.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think Lambrecht, at least as it's been interpreted by Hamilton Partners, indicates that the demand futility or the demand only has to be made at the ultimate parent level, because the ultimate parent, if it owns 100% of the other corporations, essentially controls the decision of whether or not to bring an action to enforce the breach of duty. So I don't, because the Dutch corporation is 100% owned and it has a 100% owned parent above it, I think it's irrelevant for purposes of demand futility.
Let's change the facts hypothetically and assume that instead of the subject corporation being a Delaware corporation, that it is a French corporation, but with the same tiered series of ownership. Is it your position that the right to bring a derivative action or to maintain a derivative action would be governed by French law?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So basically, your contention is that where the shareholder who is suing derivatively or trying to do it is a shareholder of a, let's say, a Spanish corporation, and the suit is brought on behalf of a subsidiary two or three tiers down, the law that applies is the law of incorporation, of the state of incorporation or country of incorporation of the subsidiary that's the subject of the suit, no matter where the ultimate parent is incorporated.
I think that is accurate as long as we assume the corporation on behalf of which the suit is brought is situated in a state like Delaware.
All right, well, let's change the hypothetical in this case, where instead of the Spanish corporation being at the top, it's the Delaware corporation.
Yes.
And the subsidiary is Spanish.
Yes, sir.
According to the principle you're advocating, notwithstanding the fact that the parent at the top was a Delaware corporation, we would apply Spanish law.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I think that's right. And I think the reason why I think Delaware law applies here is because, let me step back and say, the reason I think the court made an error is when it adopted the internal affairs doctrine and applied it, it really applied it in a private ordering sense. In other words, one of the things the court said, and this is what defendants have argued, is that my client, Segarra, is a plaintiff in a Spanish, is a shareholder in a Spanish corporation, and therefore can only expect to get the rights that Spanish law or the bylaws or the articles would allow in Spain. Now, this is a particularly contractarian view of the internal affairs doctrine.
Well, just to make sure that I have your position right, let's take an extreme hypothetical. Let's assume that we have a cascading tier of ownership where the Delaware Corporation is not number three or number four from the top, but say number 50 from the top. Would that change the analysis at all?
And all, can I ask a clarification? And all the intermediary corporations are owned 100% all the way up the line.
Well, it's a cascading chain of control.
No, it wouldn't change. But the reason I say that I think the trial court was in error on this view of the internal affairs doctrine and the private ordering aspects of it is because they've only looked at half the private ordering. I mean, when the corporation in Spain decided to establish a Delaware corporation to implement this breach of duty, this unfairness, I think when it did that, it implicated a whole set of new implicit contractual obligations.
Well, your proposition appears to be that regardless of what the ordinary application of the internal affairs doctrine would be, by that I mean that Spanish law would normally apply, whenever a Delaware corporation is used to affect a transaction that's arguably wrongful, then the internal affairs doctrine as the choice of law principle goes by the boards, and you use the law of incorporation of the Delaware subsidiary.
I think the end result that you just recited to me is correct, but I don't know if I agree that the internal affairs doctrine always requires application of the law of the place of incorporation to every aspect of that corporation's affairs. I think you have to decide, Your Honor, whose affairs are we talking about?
Oh, that's right. Your argument is that the entitlement to maintain derivative standing is not part of the internal affairs of the corporation.
Of the Spanish corporation.
Correct. Or of any corporation.
No, I'm saying that the right to maintain an action for breach of fiduciary duty in Delaware is part of a Delaware corporation's internal affairs, and I think there are several courts that have alluded to this, including Sternberg. I think Hamilton Partners has. I think a number of courts have talked about the fact that and even the Supreme Court in CTS alluded to the fact that as a chartering.
Let me just make sure I have this right. Let's go back to Justice Holland's hypothetical, where the Delaware Corporation is at the top of the pyramid, the Spanish company is in the number four inferior or subordinate position. And it's the Spanish company that was wronged by the transaction. Same facts. Your position, if I understand it right, is that under the proper application of the internal affairs doctrine, Delaware law would not apply in determining standing to bring a derivative suit. It would be Spanish law.
I'm sorry, the ultimate parent was a Delaware company?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, why would that be if the parent has the ability to control the litigation? Isn't that what the whole purpose of the Internal Affairs Doctrine relates to?
I think the purpose of the Internal Affairs Doctrine really doesn't have to do with who can control the litigation. I think it has to do with ensuring that stockholders of that corporation are treated consistently, and that the directors and management and stockholders of that corporation understand what the rules of the road are regarding accountability for bad acts.
How can we rule in your favor without overruling McDermott, Draper, and Vantage Point?
I think you can rule in my favor because this is really an issue dealing with the internal affairs of the Delaware Corporation, and you are essentially defining what the internal affairs doctrine is in this kind of a structure. So you're not rejecting the internal affairs doctrine. You're saying in a situation such as this, where you have a Delaware wholly owned subsidiary of a foreign corporation, the right to enforce or redress a breach of fiduciary duty done by the Delaware directors is part of the internal affairs of the Delaware corporation, because it has to do with the operation of that corporation. So, and I think this is true because when a foreign company incorporates a Delaware corporation, that's just not a meaningless act. When it does that, it agrees to take on all of the obligations and duties that are implied in the contract formed by Delaware law, the bylaws, and the articles. And so if part of that contract is derivative actions on behalf of upper-tier shareholders to redress wrongs at that level, then they've agreed to that when they've taken the benefits of having a Delaware corporation. I think the other result, if there's any other result, it really creates havoc, because what we'd end up with is random standards for standing depending upon where the parent was. And I don't think...
Well, isn't the randomness issue answered by looking to the board who actually made the decision to order a subsidiary's board, in effect, to breach its fiduciary duty? Here we have a board of a Spanish corporation controlled by a single shareholder, making a decision simply using a Delaware corporation as a vehicle to effectuate the decision that caused that subsidiary's board arguably to breach its fiduciary duty. We have your client, who is a shareholder in the Spanish parent, who has, under Spanish law, an opportunity to bring a derivative action, but voluntarily chooses not to go through the steps necessary to effectuate that derivative suit. Why does Delaware have an interest in the outcome under those circumstances? I ask that question because your argument sounds to me like it's a policy argument. It's not an application of the internal affairs doctrine in the traditional way. It's an argument to not look at the internal affairs doctrine in a traditional way, but look at it in terms of the inequity that was caused here. And among several options your client could have picked, you picked the Delaware option, presumably because we have a relatively liberal and principled application of fiduciary duty law. Perhaps in Spain it isn't the same. But you're really asking us to turn the internal affairs doctrine on its head.
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Well, tell me why not.
Because I think because Delaware has a flexible corporate regime and allows for private ordering in corporate affairs, one of the important pieces to that is allowing multi-tier derivative actions to enforce and redress breaches of duty. So The fact that Delaware has this very flexible enabling statute and allows private ordering really works well, because part of this is, this internal affairs, is the right to bring these actions to redress wrongdoing.
Wouldn't your argument be more compelling as a matter of policy if there were no option in Spain? Then Delaware would have to look very closely at the fact that Delaware might be the only forum to redress your grievance. Fundamental to the internal affairs doctrine is respect for other jurisdictions and the way in which they structure their internal corporate affairs. Here we have a Spanish corporation. We have your client who chose to be a shareholder in a Spanish corporation and a remedy available under Spanish law. Why would we interfere?
Because the remedy under Spanish law, Your Honor, is really not a remedy. I mean, if there are several affidavits from legal experts in the appendices, but you will see that there's only one kind of derivative action in Spain, and it's an action for damages against the directors. That's the only kind of derivative action. Okay? And so in order to bring that action, we'd have to make a demand, we'd have to have a shareholders meeting, and then we could bring the action. But the action is for damages. In a case like we have here...
But why is that inequitable? I mean, if we're talking equity as opposed to law, your client is an investor in a Spanish company. He bought into that, whatever the rights under Spanish law would be. And Spanish law does give him a right, although perhaps not a right to injunctive relief. So what's inequitable about his having to proceed under whatever the rules and restrictions of Spanish law may be?
Well, I think one of the things that's inequitable is that I think we're ignoring my client's rights that are created by Delaware law.
Oh, you've said that. The problem we're obviously having is your answer to our hypothetical, which is if the Delaware corporation is the parent at the top of the pyramid and forms wholly owned subsidiaries under the law of other countries, that the shareholders in the Delaware corporation are no longer protected by Delaware law under the internal affairs doctrine, because once the Delaware parent formed these wholly owned subsidiaries in other countries, if a problem developed with the wholly owned subsidiary, the law of that country would apply and not Delaware law.
Your Honor, I took your hypothetical to mean whether a shareholder in the Delaware parent, in order to bring an action on behalf of the subsidiary's law, would have to follow the law of that subsidiary. And I think it would. Now, that doesn't say that maybe there are other violations that the Delaware board may have committed in the course of doing what was done here. So if you make these facts different and you put the Delaware corporation where the Spanish parent is and you reverse it and put the Spanish corporation down here, I would suggest to Your Honor that the Delaware stockholder would have a direct action against the Delaware directors because they breached their duty in agreeing to this conflicting sale. Now, if I was representing a Delaware director, I would much prefer to have that action than making a demand on the Spanish board that's controlled by the Delaware board.
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court. Paul Lockwood on behalf of the defendants below, appellees. This is a case that presents another opportunity for this court to reaffirm the importance of the internal affairs doctrine in our law. It resembles the McDermott case in many respects, in that in McDermott, this court was faced with a question of whether to, for the circumstances of that case, broadly apply Delaware law. The question there presented was where there was a subsidiary, Delaware subsidiary that owns shares, and it owns shares of the parent company, Section 160 of Delaware law prevented the voting of those shares, but Panama law permitted it. Applying Delaware law in that circumstance would seem to broadly apply Delaware law and allow Delaware and its courts to control Delaware law as it applies within its organizations. But what this court recognized was that it would be eroding the principles of the internal affairs doctrine that is central to Delaware maintaining its position as the arbiter and construer and decider of what the rules are within
Mr.
a
Lockwood,
Delaware corporation.
You and Mr. Fornashari may disagree on a number of matters, but am I correct that you agree at least on what the issue is?
I do agree on that, Your Honor. I think there are two issues. There is a second issue and an alternative way to get
under the foreign nonconvenience.
The McWain standard, because it was a prior filed action in Spain. But what this case is about is Seguera, a Spanish company, purchased shares in Uniland, a Spanish company. It now wants to stand in the shoes of Uniland to assert litigation rights controlled by Uniland, because what the third tier derivative claim is a claim that's controlled by the parent company. And this court noted that last year in the Lambrecht versus O'Neill decision, in which the court said that a double derivative case is one in which the parent company is asserting its rights as the parent and the controller of the subsidiary's litigation rights. And the question presented here is a question of relative authority of the shareholders of a Spanish corporation and the board of directors of a Spanish corporation. That is a matter of Spanish law, and it's consistent with the expectations of both the investors in Uniland S.A., such as Seguera, and the directors of Uniland S.A.
Can there ever be a level of wrongdoing where the Delaware interest could trump internal affairs? Let's assume hypothetically that it's a foreign parent controlling a Delaware corporation for a criminal enterprise that is clearly beyond the pale.
Your Honor, I've learned over the years in this court and in the Court of Chancery never to say never, because our system is flexible and it deals with equities. But that extreme case isn't close here, and it would be, I think, a very rare case where that problem would exist, because it presupposes a lack of a remedy, a lack of a system at the parent company level to address these concerns. And in the Castellani case, which was a decision by the Court of Chancery in 1995, there was a derivative claim that was brought by a shareholder of a Dutch company, and there was a subsidiary that was a Delaware company. And the Dutch shareholder wanted to bring a double derivative case, but the Netherlands does not permit derivative lawsuits of any kind. So it's prohibited, and I think that matters here as well, because there's a Dutch company involved here. But you can't bring a derivative claim under Dutch law. And the plaintiff there argued, well, that gives me no remedy at all, and therefore Delaware should step up and provide me with equitable standing. But what the Court of Chancery recognized was that just because that particular approach to this problem isn't applied in the Netherlands doesn't mean that the Dutch don't have other approaches, such as regulatory approaches and other types of claims and relief. And therefore, there should be respect for the international system. It's also consistent with the Supreme Court of the United States decision in Morrison 2 years ago, in which there was an effort to globally apply the securities fraud laws of the United States for securities transactions in Europe.
Mr. Lockwood, I gather that as your side sees this case, it's basically a transitory cause of action on behalf of by a Spanish investor involving a transnational transaction that took place someplace. Could have been brought in Delaware, could have been brought in Spain, as it was, and perhaps could have been brought in the Netherlands, but it's here. And I gather your position is that under our rules, that is the rules of the litigation forum, we look to the law of the state of incorporation in which the plaintiff is an investor to determine whether that plaintiff has derivative standing to sue on behalf of some subsidiary. And that's not Delaware. It's Spain. Is that a fair summary of your position?
That's exactly our position, Your Honor.
All right. The other side argues, and it may be a policy or equity argument, but nonetheless, the argument is, well, wait a minute. In this particular case, the transaction involved the deliberate use of a Delaware corporation to accomplish what we say was a wrong to the shareholders of the ultimate Spanish corporation, the company number one at the top of the pile. Delaware should have an interest a cognizable interest in whether and how its entities are being used anywhere. And you know, the question is, what is the consequence of that? Assuming Delaware has some interest, the answer or the question then becomes, what is the consequence legally? The other side says, well, the consequence should be that Delaware law should apply to in determining whether Sagara has derivative standing. You say it isn't. Is there any consequence that ought to occur when a Delaware company is used as an entity to effect a wrongdoing, even though the wrong is to a company that is not a Delaware corporation?
Well, Your Honor, the problem with the argument as they put it is it doesn't give sufficient weight to the internal affairs doctrine as the mechanism for making that decision.
No, I understand. Your argument is, whatever the consequence is, it's not to displace the internal affairs doctrine. I'm asking a different question, and that is, what would be the consequence of a Delaware corporation being chosen as a tool to effect a wrongdoing? Is there any consequence?
Well, Your Honor, let me deal with the facts of this case because it may be easier than dealing with every possible permutation and hypothetical. We don't have a situation here where Delaware needs to step up because there isn't a remedy available to the Spanish shareholder of the Spanish company. There is a claim that they chose first. They first filed two suits in Spain. They filed an arbitration in Spain and they filed a lawsuit in Spain before they came to Delaware. The claim that they filed in Spain is described in the affidavits of our Spanish law.
I understand all that, but it doesn't answer my question. What, if any, is the consequence of a Delaware company being used as an instrument to effect a wrongdoing? And I will accept, you know, your basic argument that whatever it is, it's not to change the rules of choice of law.
Well, there's two aspects to it. The first is that the Delaware fiduciary principles govern the conduct of the Delaware fiduciaries. There's no question about that. We agree that. The internal affairs doctrine doesn't cause Delaware demand rules to apply at the parent company level. But in terms of Delaware's interest that someone signs up to be a fiduciary for a Delaware corporation, they've got to follow the rules as Delaware lays them out. So those directors who become directors or officers of a Delaware corporation are going to have to follow Delaware's rules. And that claim, wherever it's brought with respect to that particular issue, should be addressed under Delaware law. And for that to happen, there has to be respect both in the other forum and in this forum for the internal affairs doctrine. Because if there isn't respect for the internal affairs doctrine, then some other court's going to apply its own rules, and it's not going to apply Delaware rules to those conducts of the Delaware fiduciaries.
Well, let me throw this out. The it may be that there's no consequence that flows from the fact that the entity that was chosen to accomplish this alleged wrongdoing was a Delaware entity. On the other hand, perhaps that choice would at least be a context sufficient to permit a Delaware court to hear the case.
It's certainly possible. I mean, we're not saying it. For example, the Hamilton Partners case.
Let me ask the question this way. Unfortunately, this case was complicated by the fact that the same plaintiff filed two proceedings in Spain, but assume that didn't happen. Assume the Delaware, this case was the first filed. Would there be any constitutional or other policy obstacle to the case proceeding in Delaware, even if we assume that the rights of the parties would be determined under Spanish law?
They would have to comply with Spanish law in order to meet the derivative standing requirements. So, for example, in the Hamilton Partnership...
I understand that. I'm just asking whether the case could proceed in a Delaware forum.
It could if they could comply with the Spanish rules. The problem for them is that Spain lays out a procedure to follow in derivative cases, and they chose not to follow it. There's also a limitation in Spain, as is true in a lot of other companies, such as Japan, on double derivative or triple derivative cases. Spain doesn't permit them. So there's a standing issue.
That goes to the ultimate disposition of the suit. That is, that line of reasoning presupposes that the court has the power to make that determination.
Your Honor, I think there's no question that, but for the presence of another suit, if this was the only suit that was filed, there may be forum nonconvenience arguments that we would make, because there's a lot of people who speak Spanish and there's a lot of documents in Spanish, and you could say that this would be an inconvenient place to litigate. But I'll set that aside and assume that's not an issue. Then Delaware certainly can hear cases like that. Hamilton Partners is just one of those cases. It was a New York parent company. It was a Delaware subsidiary. The claim was brought against the subsidiary directors. The Court of Chancery refused to stay or dismiss that case on the grounds that it should be brought in New York, heard it in Delaware, said that there's a Delaware entity here, there's Delaware issues here, but importantly said you've got to jump through the hoops of the New York derivative standing rules in order to bring the case. And the Delaware court applied those rules. And in that case, demand futility is a possibility under New York law, and the demand futility requirements of New York law were met, and the case proceeded in Delaware. So a case can proceed. The problem here is they didn't even try to comply with the rules of Spain for bringing a derivative suit.
Well, what I'm hearing you say, and I realize this is, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but if there is a consequence in a case like this, to a Delaware entity being chosen as one of the players in an alleged scheme of wrongdoing, then at most the consequence of that would be to confer jurisdiction on a Delaware court. But it would not be to change the choice of law rules or the substantive law that would apply.
Yes, Your Honor, and that goes back to Sternberg versus O'Neill, where Sternberg says if you create a Delaware subsidiary and there's wrongdoing within that subsidiary, you open yourself up to double derivative litigation in the courts of Delaware. And certainly our position is not that kind of suit can't proceed. There were certain defendants here who moved to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, but the directors of the Delaware Corporation didn't, because, I mean, they signed on as directors of a Delaware Corporation, and they have obligations under Delaware law. But this is a question of standing. It's not a question of the underlying claims or what the underlying duties are. It's standing. And for this shareholder of a Spanish company to take over control of the Spanish company with respect to these litigation rights, it presents a fundamental question of Spanish law. It's a question of, does the board of directors of the Spanish corporation control those rights, or does the shareholder control those rights? And that question has been long settled to be a question of internal affairs. The Levine case from 1966 that Vice Senator Short decided was one of the first cases to address that question, where there was a Panamanian company, Panamanian subsidiary. There was a lawsuit here in Delaware, and the question was whether to apply Delaware's demand rules or whether to apply Panama's derivative standing rules. And the Court of Chancery, recognizing that this was a question of internal affairs, applied the standing rules of Panama. The Second Circuit came to that same decision in the 60s in the Hausman case. And then, you know, a case of great federal importance, and it's important to me because I apply it all the time when litigating Delaware law in the federal courts around the country, is the Kamen versus Kemper case of the United States Supreme Court, in which the United States Supreme Court rejected the contention that the demand rule should be federalized and that Federal Rule 23.1 creates a federal rule of demand, and instead recognized that the demand issue goes to substantive corporate law and the relative powers of the board of directors and the shareholders, and therefore said that the state of incorporation applies. And for that reason, in federal courts across the country, directors of a Delaware corporation, when they're faced with a derivative suit in federal court, their response to that derivative suit or their power and authority with respect to that derivative suit is tested under Delaware law. I think it would be ironic having the federal courts then endorsed Delaware's authority here for the Delaware Supreme Court to take it away in this case. And I think it would be a significant erosion of Delaware's authority over Delaware corporation to create this equitable crack in the internal affairs doctrine. It would be a crack that a river would run through. With respect to the question of double derivative standing and whether the subsidiaries law applies or the parent law applies on the demand issue, it's not a new question. It's been addressed by many courts. The Court of Chancery addressed it in the Castellani case that I already mentioned, which was one in which there was a Dutch parent company and a Delaware subsidiary. The derivative standing rules were applied under Dutch law. The Court of Chancery addressed it again in the Hamilton Partners case last year, in which there was a New York parent company and a Delaware subsidiary, and the standing questions were addressed under New York law. The Ninth Circuit, in a case I think very similar to this one, in a case called Batchelder versus Kawamoto, was facing the question where Honda, the Japanese company, had an American subsidiary that was incorporated under California law. And the question in that case was, does Japanese law apply to the derivative standing, or does California law apply to the derivative standing? And the Ninth Circuit held that it was a matter of Japanese law because it was a question of the relative powers of a shareholder under Japanese law and a board of directors under Japanese law. And I come back to what I think is the basic premise here and something that was recognized in McDermott and Castellani, which is when you buy shares in a Panamanian company, a Dutch company, or here a Spanish company, it's hardly unfair for the rules of standing to be applied under that country's laws. That's what you signed up for. That's what you should expect. So let's flip it. Let's take the example that my friends propose, which is a Delaware corporation creates a Cayman Islands subsidiary. The Cayman Islands has very little litigation rights for, almost none, for shareholders. Delaware, of course, takes a different approach. I've invested in Delaware Corporation. I mean, let's say it was an IPO, and they went to market, and they went to market themselves as a Delaware Corporation, and they sold that company in large part on the fact that, you know, we're doing the thing that everyone expects. We're selling Delaware. We're not selling some funky Cayman Islands entity. And then they incorporate a Cayman Islands entity underneath, and they run their business through that, and any claims relating to that business are suddenly governed under Cayman Islands law, and the standing to even sue is taken away. And my expectations as the investor in a Delaware corporation are undone. I think that would be a radical change, and it would be inappropriate, and it would be inconsistent with due process. And the internal affairs doctrine has a constitutional component to it. This court has repeatedly recognized that. It recognized that in McDermott. It recognized that in the Vantage Point case. So this is not merely a matter of internal affairs. This has to do with the 14th Amendment and due process as well.
I'm sorry, you're not saying that somehow the U.S. constitutional rights of Spanish investors would be violated if Delaware law applied to the issue of derivative standing, are you?
Well, I think if they're coming into a U.S. court, I think they've got the rights of due process within that are applied under our Constitution here. And it's certainly for any other investor in any other case. I mean, this rule would apply more than just to international cases, but it would apply, I think more commonly would apply, to cases among investors and corporations among our 50 states. With respect to the McWane issue, there is a prior pending case in Spain. There was two of them. They were filed 12 days before this action. Segarra has tried to characterize that as a different case because it seeks limited relief. But it's just a reflection of the fact that Spain approaches things differently. The affidavit of Professor Gomez that is in the appendix explains that the claim that they brought in Spain is the cornerstone of minority stockholder rights in Spain. And what they're seeking to do is they're seeking to void the resolution of the parent board of directors that instructed the subsidiaries to incorporate the Delaware entity and pursue this transaction. If they get that ruling and they're successful in voiding that resolution, then it imposes upon the directors of the Spanish corporation a fiduciary duty to do something to fix the fact that their actions were void. And it's a very flexible system. Professor Gomez doesn't predict exactly how it's going to play out. It, in end result, is
just,
not...
Just to put this in context on this issue, this alternative issue of form nonconvenience, your argument is that of the four counts of the complaint, which were dismissed on the alternative basis of form nonconvenience, there was no appeal from at least two of those counts. So those are now out of the case.
Yes,
on
Your
that basis.
Yes, Your Honor.
But your argument goes further and says essentially that the other two counts involve claims that are substantively identical to the ones that, in essence, were abandoned by the same party, and therefore they ought to be treated as if abandoned as well?
Your Honor, I think that's fair, although I would have no issue in addressing, for this court to actually address the substance of that position, which is that
That's not before us, is it? The substance of that position.
Well,
under this alternative argument, those claims rise or fall on the basis that two of the four claims were abandoned because there was no appeal.
Yes.
From their dismissal, there was an appeal from the dismissal of the other two. So in order for us to, if we're proceeding on that path, we would have to make some determination that the two claims that are left in the case are identical to the ones that were abandoned and therefore should be treated as if they had been abandoned. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. I think there's no substantive difference for the McWane analysis of counts 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. The Court of Chancery, in reaching its decision, I think because the failure to jump through the demand hoops in Spain was such a glaring failure to establish standing that it was the easiest way to dispose of the first three counts because they were conceded to be derivative. With respect to count 4, the Court applied the McWane analysis. With respect to count 3, the court said if it's not a derivative case, because there was an argument below about whether it was or was not derivative, which has also not been appealed. Since if count 3 was not derivative, it would also fall within that same framework with respect to count 4. Counts 1 and 2 are indistinguishable in terms of that analysis. All of these cases arise out of the same core facts, which is this transaction in which the Spanish Board of Directors instructed and directed the Delaware subsidiary to pursue this transaction. The process of the Spanish Board, the instructions of the Spanish Board, and the overall transaction is at issue in Spain. It's also an issue here. The Court of Chancery's rulings with respect to the availability of complete relief applies the same to all four claims. So they are indistinguishable in that respect. Unless the Court has any other questions, my time's done.
Thank you.
If it pleases the Court, my brother, who represents the defendants, thinks that this issue has been decided many times before. I wish to call the Court's attention to the fact that in virtually all the cases that are cited in the brief, for the proposition that law of the foreign country ought to apply to determining the rights in a Delaware court. In all those cases, except two, and I'll mention them, in all those cases, there was a foreign corporation whose rights were trying to be redressed in the United States. So, for example, in the Hausman versus Buckley case that was referred to, that was a single derivative action brought on behalf of a Venezuelan corporation for rights created under Venezuelan law. So they applied that, the law of Venezuela.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, is the bottom line of what you're telling us that the cases that the other side relies on don't involve prior decisions on this issue, and so the slate is clean? It's an issue of first impression, or is your position that the law has been decided in your favor?
It's not. It hasn't been decided, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll assess and take the case under advisement.